dare yourself to feel uncomfortable and know that the overcome, the resolution, the greener pasture is really on the other side of that. And whatever that looks like for your individual circumstance, you know, it, and whatever that time frame looks like, be patient with that, but know that you have it within you to overcome whatever life puts in front of you next.
The Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Actual Outdoors. They help build beautiful brands that highlight the approachable and authentic parts of outdoor recreation. Said simply, they keep it real. Learn more at actualoutdoors.com.
This is a Life in Motion audio experience, a podcast about travel, action sports, culture, and more.
What's up, and welcome to episode 199 of Life in Motion. I've got Allie Redshaw with me, who is a paraclimber and a vocal leader for inclusivity in the outdoors and climbing communities. She also happens to be a supporter of Beyond Boundaries. I'm excited to hear her story and how she's helping the outdoors be more welcoming for all. Allie, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, yes. I'm excited to have you on. And it's, you know, as Shep mentioned, you know, we've been big supporters of Beyond Boundaries and had some of his people on before as well. So it's always fun meeting new people through Beyond Boundaries, even though, you know, I'm about 16 hours away from Richmond, Virginia now. So I did grow up there and I'm from that area though. But anyways, so before we kind of get started and sort of, you know, maybe some involvement with Beyond Boundaries, you know, some of that stuff as far as, you know, kind of being a vocal leader in that space. Also, let's kind of bring it all the way back to kind of the origin story. You know, where are you from? Where you grew up? Kind of what got you into the outdoors and climbing and everything in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to share. So I am originally from Chesapeake, Virginia. So not too far from Charlottesville. And, you know, growing up in the Hampton Roads was a little bit of a food desert. At the end of high school, I went on this incredible trip to Paris and discovered that food was a culture. So when I came home, I decided I was going to go to upstate New York and go to culinary school, which is where I met my college sweetheart, my now husband. And it was really actually in New York that I truly discovered also just passion for outdoors. So, you know, living down south, growing up, we did a lot of boating, always at the beach, you know, surfing, paddle boarding, all the water things, you know, a lot of riding our beach cruisers around, but it wasn't a super mountaineering heavy place, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was really awesome and eye-opening to go, you know, just up the coast and see not only this whole world of food that is, you know, in upstate New York in the Hudson Valley and that completely enriched, saturated area, but just everything else as far as the outdoors, the gunks, you know, a whole passion and crew of people that climbed, that hiked, that camped, that spent time outside, that went out and observed, you know, the seasons changing and the leaves changing. And it was really cool to experience that. And so that sort of lit a fire in me as far as just the way that I live now, the way that I eat, fuel my body, center my mind. And a lot of that, you know, wasn't super, on the forefront of my life until I had my accident, which was actually more recent than not. So yeah, it's been a journey of nature and me sort of doing this dance. And now it's my world. It encompasses everything. It is the way that I raise my children and the way that I embody partnership with my husband. So yeah, it's been an incredible journey.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you know, like, so yeah, where I grew up was, right on the Rappahannock River. So, you know, like an hour plus, you know, north of Hampton Roads area. So, definitely understand that. So it's definitely, interesting kind of going to Paris and kind of experiencing, a little bit of a different culture in that regard. So out of curiosity, was when the going back to the like kind of the culinary aspect of it, like did you have an interest in like that, like before the Paris trip, or was the Paris trip like the actual like kind of launching off point in that regard?
I enjoyed cooking at home, but it was very very rudimentary. I had just never experienced a 3-hour meal, or just stopping in every single bakery that you see because you just can't pass up the incredible croissant that you had not only a block before at the other pastry shop that you went in. But it was, it was really incredibly heart-opening and mind-blowing to me to go on this trip. And no, my whole view of the world was different when I came home from that trip.
That's no, that's really cool. That's really cool. And then obviously you mentioned, kind of going up to upstate New York and going to culinary school and that kind of stuff. So it sounds like you're really into I feel like there's a couple different aspects in food, not to turn this into a food podcast right now, but I think it's interesting. There's it seems like there's the art aspect, obviously the nutrition aspect, but then if you're serving to someone, there's that kind of connection, I guess. If you prepare something for them, especially with somebody you don't know, so I feel like it's kind of all encompassing in that way, which in a way also relates back to the outdoors. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was it's been awesome. And I went to the Culinary Institute of America up in Hyde Park. So that was just, the premier culinary school that you can attend. And so that was incredible. An incredible experience, a wonderful program. I learned so much. So
That's awesome. It's also bad that we're recording this during lunch and I haven't eaten lunch yet.
I
But anyways, we'll ignore that part. We'll ignore that part. But so you moved up there, and obviously, as you also mentioned, the landscape and the environment much different than the Hampton Roads area of Virginia for multiple reasons. And then that's kind of what got you into sort of that side of the outdoors as far as hiking and camping and all that. So was that mainly like was it more of like, hey, I see this beautiful landscape, I'm gonna go check it out and hike, or was it a mix of, friends that you met there that were already kind of doing those outdoor activities? Like what was that like, well, I guess what was that initial kind of jump start? Like how did that work? And then what like ultimately kept you like, I guess, involved in that while also balancing what you're doing in school and everything in between?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a lot of meeting friends, working in restaurants, and then those friends saying, "Hey, we hike in our free time, or we go out and leaf peep and and look at the stars at night. What do you do for fun?" And it was just, yeah, so it was definitely friend culture, social culture that got me out into the outdoor space. But I think your heart always has to be open for that. So I definitely think I had a little, a flicker of a flame in my chest, of excitement for that. And I, still yearn for that. And I love that part of, climbing in general, just feeling the texture of the rocks and being outside and being one with your surroundings is really, really cool to me. It holds a very special place in my heart and was really integral in my recovery. And actually, interestingly enough, even though I did get to start hiking and doing those things, post college with these friends in New York, I really did not. I actually had never rock climbed before, until after I had lost my hand, which is much farther down the line. And so I still hadn't had that taste of, that part of nature or outdoors, or really even seeing very many people doing that, because that wasn't what my friend group was doing, even though that's a super popular area for climbing. So I just think it's interesting that that all kind of circles back and seems very interwoven.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's cool that you're, able to find your outdoor community there, as, through friends and coworkers and everything else, to kind of flame Yeah, feed the flame, I guess, a little spark that you mentioned. So that part's really cool. So obviously, you know, you're up there enjoying the outdoors, going through school. Kind of what was the next step after that? Did you stay up there for a while before moving back? Or kind of what did that look like?
We moved a little further into the Hudson Valley, like Rhinebeck area, and were there for about 5 years after college, just working in restaurants in upstate, studying wine, learning more, trying to kind of deepen our craft and make some money. And then my sister started, having children, and I wanted to be close to them, and I wanted to be present with my family. So we made our way back down south to Charlottesville, which I always, I say is a really kindred spirit to the Hudson Valley area. I feel like it's, a little ahead of its time. It's really trendy. It's got eclectic food and art scene and music, and it's just a really vibrant area that also has a really incredible focus on farm-driven culture and food and supporting that, those farmers. So, which is super important to us. So, it seemed incredibly perfect to come here to be, 3 hours away from family, but still close enough to where we can visit. And really, we settled in and found ourselves in the restaurant scene here very quickly. And that was a great fit.
That's awesome. And you know, that's it's you know, cool in a way. You know, you're kind of able to replicate, you know, what you're experiencing in New York as far as like the landscape and stuff, because you know, as you mentioned, you know, Charlottesville is beautiful, and it's you know, that's one thing that makes Virginia so great. You know, you have the coast and the ocean and all that stuff, but you know, the further west you get out, you kind of get that additional kind of lifestyle that offers. So once you all moved back to there, I'm guessing you kind of jumped back into or found that new outdoor community fairly easily.
We did, which is, I mean, that is really what Charlottesville is best at, is everything outdoors in all seasons. You can ski, you can snowboard, you can do all the water sports. You can do any type. I mean, you can go up to Mount Rogers, which is almost, baseline elevation, Colorado. You can get outside here and do things, and there is an extreme pull from the community to do those things. And so that was that when in an area so saturated, it was incredibly easy and welcoming and awesome.
Yeah, no, that's great to be able to do all that. So you mentioned you kind of stayed involved with that, but it wasn't necessarily until you know, I guess the accident, I guess, is the best way to say that, too, that you started, you know, climbing and kind of getting to that. So I don't know if you're can shed any light, I guess, in that regard, or kind of that process as well. You know, obviously one wouldn't typically think that rock climbing would come after that. So, I think
Yeah.
that's super awesome, in itself, but
That's the question I get the most frequently is, did you climb before you lost your hand? And people are always like a little wide-eyed when I say, no, I didn't. That was pretty much step one in my recovery, was climbing. I was working in a restaurant here in Charlottesville, and I circle back to the irony of, the fact that I am a classically trained chef. I went to culinary school, and then I incurred this really terrible accident in the kitchen. And it's just a testament to the fact that accidents happen. So I was working a pretty early morning prep shift at a restaurant, and just was using a meat grinder and had a terrible accident. And unfortunately, that resulted in the amputation of my right hand, which was my dominant hand. And as one can assume, as far as being a chef is concerned, that's fairly important. Not something that you can't overcome, but a pretty large obstacle. And I was about 7 weeks pregnant at the time with my my second daughter, and so that was hugely unfortunate. And was definitely I attribute climbing to both of our recovery, mine and my daughter's, because even before I was able to, before I had her and I was still pregnant and I was trying to recover, there were parts of the community that are individuals that are my now mentors for climbing or things like that, that are so incredibly pertinent and important in my life, that were there and present and starting to surface in those early stages of recovery, really before climbing was ever mentioned or on the forefront. So that was just, it was a really tough time for me and my family. My other daughter was a year and a half old, and for my husband, it was he got woken up at 5 a.m. one day and said, "Hey, your wife's had an accident. You need to come now," with a year and a half year old. And so yeah, it was but I also am super grateful through that time. Again, the power of Charlottesville and community and why we've stayed here for so long showed up. Meal trains started, people were pouring in to offer to, to take care of our daughter, to, to take anything off of Ian's hands that he, couldn't handle, like a true showing of community and the power of that, which is again why I give everything that I have to organizations that support community outreach in that way. Where we are ready to show up for people when they are in their deepest valley or in their lowest low or in, experiencing their greatest obstacle. Like Beyond Boundaries does, because I think it's so important, and I wouldn't be here if not for that sort of outreach, that pulling of the community to me to say, "Hey, this is really hard, and we're here for you, and we love you, but also there's life on the other side. And let me tell you about all of these cool things that you can do as an adaptive athlete, or, what sort of recreational, adaptive, inclusive activities we can do, or how can we get you into the outdoors?" And that was really awesome. So, rock climbing surfaced very, very quickly after that, and was and is, my lifeline. It is. It's everything.
Well, and an unfortunate situation, of course. And I couldn't even imagine, especially, being pregnant and having a year and a half year old, everything that goes along with that as well, and then adding that, but to have the internal strength and then also community around you, unfortunately, in some cases, people it, that can really change people outside of just, the physical part of it. So I feel like it's really inspiring to kind of hear, like, how not only the community fell around you in that way and supported you, but to kind of, get through those different life changes on kind of both spectrums, and then now turning that into a huge positive and giving back to that same, quote unquote community that helped you. I think is really great. So with the rock, like, obviously, so that happened, and that wasn't until after that you started the rock climbing is mainly stuff. Was that just like a friend saying, "Hey, like now let's try rock climbing, let's find something else"? Was there something that kind of appealed to it, kind of given the situation, or like I guess where did that connection happen, I guess, or where did that first come up, I guess, within kind of that recovery part?
Yeah, so I was a very active individual before my accident, and so I, obviously was very, I was curious as to how I was going to be able to move my body, and I had someone, we had someone reach out that my husband and I knew, who said, "Hey, I, you know, met this woman when I was summiting Kilimanjaro with her, who runs this non-for-profit in Colorado. And she's an amputee. She's a lower leg amputee, and she is incredible. She runs these programs for adaptive adaptive athletes. And she, she does cycling, rock climbing, all these other things. I think you should look her up and just give Allie something to look forward to, you know, just to start reaching out to have community." And I was a little shy at first, a little apprehensive, thinking, you know, this woman is really well known. Who, she's not going to give me the time of day. You know, I'm some weirdo, as far as she knows, like on instant messaging, being like, "Hey, this person told me to reach out." You probably get 1,000 messages a day, whatever. And that's not at all the response that I got. And this individual's name is Kirsty Ennis. And she runs a non-for-profit called the Kirsty Ennis Foundation. And she is a lower leg amputee from a helicopter accident that she had as a Marine. And she is the most incredible. She's been on the cover of ESPN magazine, rock climbing. She is like the coolest, most incredible. She's a professional snowboarder. Just all around, just bad A lady boss, but she also is so, so humble and so incredibly giving and does work in the community like no one I've ever seen. And just, it was incredibly potent receiving, you know, word from her that, you know, "Hey, you should apply for my rock climbing clinic. You know, it's my next clinic coming up. I think you should try it." And I'm pretty sure she would have, it could have been anything. She does mountain biking clinics or snowboarding clinics, but it was divine intervention that climbing was the next clinic. And I had never touched a rock before or put a harness on or done anything like that, but I knew that there were going to be other amputees there. And I knew that at that point in my life, I didn't even know how to tie my shoes or button my pants or really brush my teeth. And I was really struggling and I needed to go and I needed to see other people that maybe they didn't look like me. Maybe they had a different disability or a difference, or they had a cognitive difference, but I just needed to know that there were other people out there that had weathered these things before me, as unfortunate as that is. But it's, you know, it's that community that's able to hold people, right? You know, I have people that come up to me that say, "Hey, I am pregnant and I know that my baby already, I know they're going to have a difference. And I'm just asking you how you live your life. Like, how do you do things?" And it's like, it's the expectation, right? That we show up as new to this body as I may be. You know, I look at them and I give them everything I have, every piece of advice that I have, and every ounce of support and resources that has ever been there for me, I share, because that's how you create the community and that's how we're able to sustain support for each other. And so meeting Kirsty and going to her rock climbing clinic was, it was another Paris moment. It was a life-changing experience that, you know, that opened me up in a whole new way, that showed me an entire facet of community, of life, of humans that truly up until this point in my life, I had really lived pretty ignorantly. I had used verbiage that was pretty offensive to people with disabilities, like calling them, you know, wheelchair dependent. Those friends are not dependent on their wheelchair. They're wheelchair users. They use that as a resource, as a tool for them to live their life, just like we live our life. And it was really incredible to go there and to be taught right away, "Hey, like, your language matters, your actions matter, how we speak out, how we show up, you know, be it creating inclusivity in the outdoors, creating inclusivity and awareness in the media, however we're like called to show up, do that. And it's important, and it does matter, and it does create impact and change. And so that was the first time I touched rock. And by the time I flew home from that trip, Kirsty had reached out to me and said, "Hey, I really think you're a good climber. I think you should keep at it. Like, I think you should keep at it so much that I will sponsor you to keep at it."
Really?
And I laughed. I guffawed. I thought she was a little insane. But she, to this day, she is one of my best friends, and I support her with every ounce of my body. But she must have seen something in me. She must have felt that energetic spark of this girl needs this, and I think she can do it.
Yeah. That's so. It's funny, the serendipity of it, like you said, it could have been, the next clinic could have been mountain biking or whatever other outdoor sport, but it just happened to be rock climbing. That was the next clinic when you reached out to her. And they just kind of all worked out that way as well. And it sounds like, as you mentioned, sort of like, prior to that accident, you probably didn't notice others with things like that, or even, think about, somebody that wasn't amputee rock climbing or mountain biking or snowboard or anything else that like that. And it sounds like that kind of opened up your eyes, obviously. I don't mean that in an ignorant way. But I feel like a lot of people that aren't in those situations can sometimes overlook that, unfortunately, if that hasn't happened specifically to them. But, to be able to go there, find the community, and then obviously have her continue to reach out to you and sponsor you and kind of grow, and obviously good friends now. I think I don't know, I'm kind of rambling now, but it's just kind of an awesome story. Not only that, but you seem like a really, really good personality as well, just in general as well. So kind of, being able to help and be someone that others can lean on, in those situations, and that it sounds like it's really, really encouraging for others that might be in similar situations.
I hope to do that. And I also, hold myself in a position where I'm always ready to receive and to learn. And I know that that's going to keep happening. Every time we show up in these communities, we need to show up ready to learn perspective, and to, share the responsibility of that awareness, which is, it's not a burden, it's a gift. It's
yeah.
So cool to be able to be a resource for people. And it does. I mean, it fills you up, as cheesy as that sounds. It really, it has given me a sense of purpose, and it has shown me how to lead my daughters in a way that I think is really incredible, because they're both, what we would define as able-bodied. And I think it's super important that right now, when they're 8 and they're 6, that they are, going to the paraclimbing national championships with me and seeing individuals that live their life in sort of this, this kind of small, or what society wants to kind of put these constraints on, which I feel like we're doing a really good job of breaking those barriers, but even down to, just wheelchair users being able to get in and out of buildings readily, right? Just for them to see that accessibility is incredibly important. And that's not just indoors. That's not just inside a building. That's outdoors. That's on the trails. That's, how do we make ice climbing accessible for friends that have, MS, or that are suffering from some sort of cervical spine damage, or, just how do we make that a welcoming space? And, I think it is through organizations like the Kirsty Ennis Foundation, like Beyond Boundaries, like Sportable. There's an organization called the Range of Motion Project that, their whole mission is to create accessibility to prosthetic care, because, hey, prosthetics are so expensive and they're ever changing, right? It's like an iPhone. Every year there's a new upgraded version that has new tools that you need to use just to take your leg on and off or put your foot on and off. And that's a reality for so many people, for a large percentage of the population, of the world, not just our corner of the world. And so there are so many pertinent, incredible, powerful organizations out there on every scale, from locally in your community to global organizations, that are creating these spaces for individuals, for families, for athletes, you know, whatever your circumstance may be.
Yeah, no, it's definitely inspiring to see that. And I think, you touched on a couple things there that, you know, that people that are able-bodied, you know, they don't realize that, or they might look at a rock wall or a trail or, you know, just insert whatever outdoor activity here, or even things that aren't outdoor activities, and just make kind of false assumptions of like what is possible, you know, depending on so many situations. And I think, you know, and me personally, you know, when I came across Beyond Boundaries after I moved out to Missouri. I don't think they hadn't started yet, just yet, when I was still out there. But you know, it really wasn't until that I came across Beyond Boundaries when I was looking for different nonprofits to work with that I came across them. Like, holy cow, he's doing like these kind of outdoor activities with people, you know, with vision impairment and that are in wheelchairs and everything else. Like, that's awesome, because like you kind of get ignorant to a sense, unfortunately. But once you see things like that and see organizations, and, you know, whether it's yourself individually or all these different organizations that you mentioned, it helps you kind of see the world in a different light, in that perspective, and really take an appreciation for that and a better understanding, which is really cool. So how did you stumble upon Beyond Boundaries?
So it was actually in Charlottesville. We don't have any big wall gyms. We have a bouldering gym that's really awesome. But I was seeking, you know, when I started competitively climbing, I was seeking a gym that had larger walls that, you know, potentially had someone that could be my coach. And when I originally reached out to Peak, which is in Richmond, they had said, you know, COVID, it was COVID time and everything kind of closed down. And then when I reached back out again, it was, you know, they didn't have any adaptive programs per se, but they did have one individual that was really excited about, you know, about adaptive climbing, even though he had never worked in that arena of climbing before, and would really like to work with me, and or was willing to give his time, right?
Yeah.
And so I showed up one day, and this really awesome now friend, Sam King, who is you know, the master of adaptive climbing at Peak, and we've started a program there, and he has started a program there and really runs it. I mean, it's incredible to see everyone showing up, and that's with Beyond Boundaries and Sportable. But he was just excited about organizations around Richmond that were doing cool work in the inclusive adaptive community, and he told me about, you know, Beyond Boundaries and said, you know, I think we want to do this adaptive climb night. You know, I think you should either come as a, you know, in whatever way you want to show up. And it's cool because I'm a volunteer for them. I don't climb with them as an athlete, but it's really fun because people show up and they see somebody that looks like them, somebody that has a difference.
Yeah.
And I'm just there to volunteer. And that's, you know, I don't know. It's just a cool, you know, not that people with disabilities don't have the ability to do that, but sometimes it's just cool to show up and see somebody, you know, that looks like you, or that has walked the same path, or has, you know, has overcome things and to be able to turn around and give back time is cool. But anyway, I found Beyond Boundaries through Peak, through Sam, and, you know, of course, the minute I met Shep and Katie and everybody that works with Beyond Boundaries, all the athletes, it was match made in heaven. You know, love at first sight. They are just, you know, they're the most incredibly incredible, heart forward organization and group of people. So it's a privilege to get to do work with them.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, Shep and everybody at Beyond Boundaries, they've been awesome. I actually have talked with Sam King as well before. He was a guest on maybe a year and a half ago. But no, they're truly awesome people. And that's why I love working with Shep and all of them from that perspective and featuring all that. And I think, you know, you also mentioned something, you know, not just being, you know, you were there to volunteer, like not as a being a participant or an athlete there, which I feel like for the people that were participating, you know, has to really be really encouraging, I would think, you know, seeing someone, you know, in a similar way, but you're there to help, not there to learn or whatnot. So I think that aspect is really cool. And obviously, what you're doing to kind of help the adaptive community in that sense. Are there any other kind of like things or programs that they're doing that I might have missed that, you know, kind of are furthering sort of that internal mission that you have, to help others in that way?
We haven't, you know, officially launched it yet, but, two other, upper limb, amputees or, limb different friends of mine who live on different parts of the country. We met through adaptive climbing, and we are starting an adaptive yoga journey. And that's all just because we are all yoga instructors or deep in the yoga world and community, and all individually have experienced, you know, just the way that the power of words in a class and how that can change someone's experience or just their mindset for that moment and how powerful that is. And so that's something I'm really excited about. That's really, really fresh and new. But we're really, really excited about that. Not only just to deepen our own knowledge of inclusive language around fitness in general and how we can make that more accessible to everybody individually. Yeah. And again, you know, the Range of Motion Project is one that I deeply support and I think is an incredible cause and is often, you know, not something that we think about. You know, we don't think about the actual logistics of someone's prosthetic and the cost of those individual pieces and the importance of just one screw, you know, holding someone's knee or ankle. And so I love working with them and supporting them. There's a program, Sportable, that Beyond Boundaries yeah. works with. And I'm actually applying to join their associate board of directors to try to just, yeah, broaden our knowledge, our landscape, you know, how we're supporting adaptive athletes in, you know, over the over 30 sports, I think that they support adaptively, from, you know, rugby, lacrosse, soccer, to track, to climbing. So, you know, there are a lot of really incredibly awesome, you know, the Kirstie Ennis Foundation, I will always support and, you know, be a fervent, you know, individual that shows up for every event to volunteer and help her out. And you know, USA Paraclimbing, adaptive climbing in general, adaptive climbing at Peak, really trying to grow that program, help Sam in any way that I can, make that more of an all-year program, an outdoor program, create a team of adaptive athletes. You know, Sam works a lot with Upending Parkinson's, which is a group, that, you know, takes takes people who are journeying through Parkinson's disease and introduces them to rock climbing. And so that's been really cool to get to work with some of those athletes and to support them in competition and to watch them, you know, do incredible things. So many opportunities. Yeah, and I'm always ready. I've always got my ear to the ground. I'm ready for, you know, I also the Lucky Finn Project is another one that I really, really love supporting and is an organization that focuses more on, you know, families and younger kids that have upper limb difference and, you know, just how to navigate that. And that's been a really incredible, I've gotten to go to two major events with them and just get to volunteer and work and help. And Molly, the founder, is incredible, and she has done so much important work in the community, and to see all of the different ways that she supports families is I can't even say it's inspiring because it's more than that. So yeah, I just, you know, I'm always blown away by the grace and the willingness of people to give what they have access to those that may not have access to those things.
Absolutely. And you know, you're painting yourself as like the ultimate ambassador for everybody. So that's awesome. That's awesome. And so many different organizations that are very similar, but you know, different in their own ways and that kind of stuff as well. So it's cool that, you know, you're you know, offering, you know, whatever help in that capacity that they need to help with their programs, events, everything as well. Which is really cool. And kind of goes back to what I said before, you know, it wasn't until I came across Beyond Boundaries, you know, as an able-bodied person that I didn't really open my eyes, to things like that. So it's cool that all these different organizations are out there, not only to help those individuals and let these individuals experience all these different activities, but also for, you know, people like myself to kind of see that and not, you know, not be ignorant in that way. So I think all of that's really important kind of from all angles there. So, you know, it's cool to watch all of that kind of grow. And it's cool to hear, like I said, you're the ultimate ambassador there. So,
Thanks.
so to that point, you know, one thing I always like to ask our guests is kind of, you know, one piece of advice that they can take away. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously given, you know, how your accident happening, the timing with everything, and then how ultimately you kind of everything lined out, you know, pretty well as far as your friend saying, hey, you know, maybe Ali should check out this organization, and then you reaching out and happen to be rock climbing, kind of everything kind of worked out really well. What kind of like encouragement or I guess inspiration would you provide to somebody that, you know, maybe it wasn't a lifelong thing, or maybe it was is sometime, you know, kind of an accident that happened where their whole world essentially got shifted upside down. But to kind of keep that positivity and find what's out there and find, you know, how to reconnect with, you know, maybe an old passion, or in your case, a new passion, and find that community and just kind of keep that positivity going through, you know, what one could imagine as a difficult time.
I would say I'm doing a speaking engagement this weekend, so I'm really readying myself for a live, you know, moment of inspiration. And I think I would say, you know, dare yourself to be uncomfortable. And for those of us that, you know, everyone struggles, and maybe your struggle is something you wear on the outside of your body, like me, where, you know, I try to hide my arm sometimes or shy away from just the conversation that I don't want to have when people have questions, you know. Or maybe your struggle is just, man, my mindset is really negative today and the traffic is really bad and my day is jam-packed and it's just a bad one, right? And so whatever your struggle is, the uncomfortableness that you're feeling is growth. It's you pushing yourself, that intuition that you have inside of you that says, hey, you can do this. You can muster everything you have, and you can walk into that room, or you can breathe and have patience, or you know, whatever your challenge is, dare yourself to feel uncomfortable and know that the overcome, the resolution, the greener pasture is really on the other side of that. And whatever that looks like for your individual circumstance, you know, it and whatever that time frame looks like, be patient with that, but know that you have it within you to overcome whatever life puts in front of you next. And also know that the support is there for you, as resistant as you may be at first. Lean into your friends, your family, the people who care for you, your community. You know, it's incredible the life-changing impact that it can have on allowing somebody to gift you a meal. And, you know, then knowing somewhere in the near future, in the far future, that you will serve the community in that way. You will get to give that back to somebody and change their world and do that for them and make that impact. So that's my advice. Dare to be uncomfortable, dare to overcome it.
I love it. I think that's great. You know, I was trying to think of the saying, I don't know what was saying about buffalo running through the storm instead of weathering the storm or whatnot. So I feel like that's right. You know, if you, you know, whatever that problem you might be facing, just, you know there's something, you know, better on the other side, and you just kind of, you know, find a way, find that community, find that support to get through that situation. But, you know, that green, dry, sunny pasture will be on the other end of it. So I love that. So, to that point, where can people find you online? Are there any other additional shout outs you want to mention? I know we talked about a lot of awesome organizations as well, but where can people kind of keep up to what you're up to?
Yeah, I'm not super, super, you know, huge on social, but I am on Instagram. And generally, I try to utilize that as a platform where I am shouting out constantly or keeping people up and up on what events are coming up next or how they can support, you know, what I'm on fire for in that, at that time. So that's a great resource.
Awesome. Well, everybody, definitely check her out. See what she's up to. You know, if you're close to any of those organizations that we talked about, definitely, you know, volunteer, help out, see how you can help out, and kind of, you know, open your eyes in that light. It's awesome. And it's been awesome to talk to you, hear about your passion, to helping others and your story that goes along with it. And I really appreciate all that you're doing, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
Thanks for listening. And hey, if you've made it this far and like what you've heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and let your friends know about Life in Motion. Until next time.